Raymond had selected Ralph Daniel Nelson, a longtime mobile executive with extensive experience in the Middle East, as his point man. Lead country manager, in the ExxonMobil vernacular, in Riyadh, the Saudi capital. Nelson was a Naval Academy graduate and former U.S. Marine infantry officer who had served in Vietnam during the late phases of the war. He was a tall, silver-haired, broad-shouldered man. He could handle Raymond's intimidations, and he conformed to Saudi expectations. Born of Dallas and other primetime soap operas relayed by satellite of what American oil executives should look and sound like. Nelson had years of experience in Qatar and the Gulf region, and he knew the gas industry from previous work for Mobil. With Raymond behind him, Nelson pressed for deal terms that would produce returns for ExxonMobil of more than 16% on capital invested. A successful deal would deliver as much as $15 billion in investment to the kingdom. Nelson now dined monthly with Saud al-Faisal at the foreign minister's relatively modest, by the standards of Saudi princes, Riyadh home. 5 or 6 days a week, Nelson and Raymond conferred by telephone about the Saudi project, punctuated by face-to-face meetings in Irving. Nelson grew into a mysterious and somewhat feared figure in ExxonMobil's executive ranks by virtue of his unusual access to the chairman. He was the only lead country manager who worked directly for the chairman. Terrorists struck Saudi Arabia sporadically during the first years after the September 11 attacks. Slightly before midnight on a dark Riyadh night in 2003, a car pulled up to the security station at the Alhamra Oasis Village, a 404-unit residential compound favored by Western professionals. As the guards began to open the compound's formidable gate for the car, whose driver they recognized as a resident, an unfamiliar Toyota sedan and GMC Suburban truck turned into the entrance. The vehicles were moving suspiciously fast. The guards scrambled to shut the gate, but were foiled by a spray of bullets shot from the Toyota's windows. As the guards fell, the cars forced their way into the grounds and proceeded to the swimming pool, where a residence party was in progress. Four men armed with AK-47s sprang from the Toyota and mowed down as many guests as they could before continuing to the compound's villas. The gunmen banged on doors and mercilessly shot those who emerged. "I will kill them all," one gunman cried. When they had restored order, officials reported at least 13 dead and dozens injured. Among those harmed were two ExxonMobil employees and one of their wives, who was pregnant at the time. Raymond and the management committee at headquarters set up a corporate security team to assess the vulnerability of employees and assets worldwide in light of Al-Qaeda's terrorism. Saudi Arabia was a place of obvious risk. Michael Shanklin, a former Marine and Central Intelligence Agency case officer from the Watts neighborhood of Los Angeles, who now worked for ExxonMobil Global Security, traveled to the kingdom. He developed a comprehensive security plan for the corporation in consultation with Mohammed bin Nayef, a powerful royal family member at the Saudi Ministry of the Interior. The local CIA station relayed intelligence that Nelson himself was an Al-Qaeda target. Senior executives at Irving proposed evacuating Nelson and all of the rest of the corporation's staff in the kingdom. Nelson resisted. "An evacuation will kill our venture potential," he argued. Although there were fierce internal debates over the question, most of the corporation's employees remained. For ExxonMobil, the big question remained whether Saudi Arabia had enough freestanding natural gas to justify the risks to employees. Associated gas, intermingled with oil, was too complicated to produce for the purposes the Crown Prince had in mind. ExxonMobil still had libraries full of field data from its time as an Aramco partner before nationalization. The corporation still employed geologists and engineers who had worked for Aramco in that era. Raymond and other executives polled them and discovered that they were skeptical about Abdullah's hopes. "Our explorers and these guys who worked with Aramco were very doubtful that there would ever be significant reserves sufficient to really support the kinds of projects that Crown Prince Abdullah and Foreign Minister Al-Faisal envisioned," Raymond recalled. "The massive industrialization they outlined would require an enormous amount of gas. Our people kept saying, 'No, it's not going to be there.'" ExxonMobil's biggest prospect was a structure called Tukman in the kingdom's South Gawar field. The more the corporation's geologists scrutinized it, the more doubtful they grew. Raymond and Nelson eventually advised Al-Faisal that if the kingdom wanted to find enough freestanding gas to fuel the projects it had outlined, the partners would have to move into Saudi territories previously set aside for Saudi Aramco. But Abdullah proved unable or unwilling to do this. Instead, what they wanted to do was build the kinds of projects Abdullah had proposed and then find the gas, Raymond recalled. No way, Raymond told his colleagues. We are going to end up with some projects where the only financial motivation behind them is to produce the gas. And if the gas isn't there, then we are just going to end up with a bunch of albatrosses. For their part, Saudi negotiators felt that the mid-teens profit margins demanded by ExxonMobil and other corporations in the gas projects were too high, and that the big oil executives were not willing to take enough risks. Saud Al-Faisal owned a home in Beverly Hills. One of his neighbors was the actress Drew Barrymore. As the negotiations foundered in early 2003, he summoned Raymond and Al-Naimi, the oil minister, to his home. Raymond announced, I think I ought to pull out of this deal. There's not enough gas to drive the process forward. It can't work this way. You're asking us to drive an Abrams tank with a Toyota engine. Al-Naimi challenged him. Saudi Arabia had plenty of natural gas, he believed, more than enough to fuel profitably the projects Abdullah had in mind. Lee, I think your people aren't being very honest with you. He implied that ExxonMobil's geologists and executives were underplaying the potential of the deal to gain an advantage while negotiating financial terms. Raymond exploded. Ali, you can insult the hell out of me. I don't care what you say about me. But when you start screwing with my people, that's another matter. Raymond told the Aramco chief that he had no business questioning the integrity of ExxonMobil's scientists and business analysts. He was so hot that they had to call a break. The ExxonMobil team stepped outside on a deck overlooking Drew Barrymore's yard. I wish that hadn't happened, Raymond said. Do you think I overreacted? He asked. Still, I couldn't let him insult my workforce. They went back inside. The mood was calmer, but the Saudi gas initiative was dead. At a later meeting, Al-Naimi handed Nelson a letter, one he would also give to other consortia members, canceling their rights to negotiate. Raymond eventually learned that Aramco had actually started drilling in the areas ExxonMobil had evaluated. The Saudis apparently wanted their own evidence about how much gas was really in the ground. Raymond was irate. This is not how partners operated. He blamed Naimi. If that's the game, you can count us out, he told Al-Faisal. Raymond also wrote to Abdullah to ask if Naimi's actions truly represented the Crown Prince's position some 4 years after the hopeful convening in Virginia. Naimi soon eliminated all doubt by redesigning the project and bidding it out to new corporate partners. The areas ExxonMobil said were dry turned out to be dry. 5 years of effort had come to nothing.